great little trivial nuggets in all football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's Gabe time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. With today's special guest host, Sparky Pfeiffer.
Let's do this on a Friday, Father's Day weekend ahead, coming up here on a Sunday. I am sure lots of plans are being made, celebrating dad. And if you don't have your dad around anymore and you have kids, that means they're celebrating you, which also can be a lot of fun as well. And hope everybody has a good time. I will be at a youth baseball tournament on Father's Day weekend, away from where I am. So that's what I'll be doing on Father's Day weekend. And you are a busy, busy guy, Mr. Connor.
Oh, for Father's Day weekend, yes. We have a lot going on with the Dunning family this upcoming weekend.
You've got all kinds of stuff. You're going to be driving all over the place.
I will be.
He's got that going on, and so let's get into what's coming up on today's show. Jason Munns, Commercial Appeal, talk Memphis basketball. He'll join us here in the second segment of the show. Looking forward to talking to him. David Cobb will lead off the 5 o'clock hour. Ryan Horvath of BetMGM Tonight, he will join us coming up at about 5:20 or so. Look ahead to what possibly could be the last game of the NBA Finals coming up this evening. So we'll talk to him, like I said, at 5:20. I want to start off talking about a topic that, to be quite honest with you, drives me nuts. And I'm sick of talking about already, and we haven't even gone through the first season. Caitlin Clark. How much have you all talked about Caitlin Clark on this show, Connor?
I'd say we've probably talked about her weekly since probably the NCAA tournament. So frequently we talk about her.
Okay. I don't know what everybody else's opinions are on her. I will tell you my opinion. And as the day goes by, there's no question I'm right. That is what is being done here from people that talk about her in the media, from fans and others, are setting unfair expectations of her that are absolutely ridiculous. We are looking at Caitlin Clark and saying, we need you to be Tiger Woods. We need you to be Michael Jordan. We need you to be LeBron. We need you to transcend the sport and make huge, have huge deal and implications, I guess, on all aspects of life with inside of the WNBA. You're going to be the savior of the WNBA. You're going to raise it up from where it was. And it was going in the right direction. No question. And you're going to take it to a whole new level. Now, again, they already gave her a basketball, or her own Wilson basketball, name basketball. They already gave her her own shoe line and all this other stuff before she'd even played a game. All of that was already done when she left Iowa before she got to the Indiana Fever. She was a very good college basketball player, right? Unbelievable three-point shooter and so forth. But also, while she was at Iowa, she ran her mouth, took cheap shots at people, did her thing. That's her style. That's how she is. Very, very aggressive. So now she gets to the WNBA, and when you get drafted towards the top of a draft, whether it's the National Football League, the NBA, whatever, in a deal where, you know, you are expected to play right away. So this doesn't, you know, involve baseball necessarily because you have to go through a farm system. It takes multiple years to get there or several years to get there. So not as much there. But when you're talking about a sport where you have to walk onto the court or the field to play right away, you're being put in a horrible situation more times than not, right? You're being surrounded by a team that sucked the previous year. Now, there might be an exception to the rule this year in the NFL with Caleb Williams getting drafted by the Bears and having Keenan Allen and DJ Moore and Roma Odunze, who they drafted, and Cole Kmet at tight end, and getting DeAndre Swift at running back. You know, that's probably the best situation a quarterback's ever been drafted into at the number one overall pick of an NFL draft. And maybe the exception to the rule is Tim Duncan, who gets drafted by the San Antonio Spurs, and that only happened because David Robinson got hurt that year, which is why they were so bad. That afforded them the opportunity to be in the lottery and then win the lottery to get Tim Duncan and put him on a team that was already pretty good. But for the most part, you get stuck in bad situations with bad basketball teams. which she is. I don't think, maybe I'll be wrong, I don't think she is going to be able to live up to these insane expectations. In order for her to live up to these insane expectations, what's she going to have to average? 30 a night? Somewhere in that area? She's going to have to win several rings, for sure. She's going to have to be the best player to play this game. And it's going to have to be, essentially, without question. It's going to have to be something where it's not going to be debatable. If she's an all-star, okay. Bunch of all-stars every year. So what? She had 7 points last night. Seven. That's not going to cut it. She's had several games where she's had more than five turnovers in a game. Six, seven turnovers in a game. She's had games where she's played well, where she scored over 30. Yes. Absolutely. But like most rookies, very inconsistent and trying to find her way. The talent level in the WNBA, I think, is way better than what everybody in the media was giving it credit for, that was assuming she was going to come in and dominate this league. And it's not happening. But in order for her to get to where everybody wants her to get to, at some point, she's going to have to dominate. Whether that's year three, whether that's year four, whatever. I'm of the firm belief that after this year and at some point next year, it's going to fade. The star is going to fade because her team's not going to be good. She's not going to be one of the best players in the league, probably right off the bat. All this nonsense about, oh, Caitlin Clark, she's not in the Olympics. She doesn't deserve to be on the Olympics. That's the first thing. What has she done in the WNBA to deserve to be on the Olympics from a statistical category? Yeah, she's setting records for rookies on 3 points made and all this other stuff. That's fine. But we're talking about the best players in the world, or in the U.S., to represent the Olympics. Secondly, if you're on that team, you've busted your butt, you've earned that roster spot, and now they say, hey, we're going to put Caitlin on there. Not because she's necessarily done anything at a high level and in our league yet, but because we want more eyeballs watching the Olympics. We want to help out the TV rights deal to get that done. That's why we're going to put her on. That coach and those players don't want to deal with that. They don't want to deal with having a sideshow the entire run. Because you want to know what's going to happen? Caitlin Clark doesn't play. Team USA wins by, I don't know, 20. What's the question going to be after? Why didn't Caitlin Clark play? Why isn't she getting any run? That's all it's going to be. If they lose, why didn't Caitlin Clark play more? She could have helped you win. The whole storyline of that entire Olympic team would be about her. And it wouldn't be about the success of the team. Stephen A. Smith brings up Christian Laettner. Oh, well, Christian Laettner. And the Dream Team. Well, yeah, sure. But he was of no threat to be a storyline inside of that whole team. None. And you were going from college to pro. So they were trying to put a college kid on there to make the transition or whatever the case may be, fine. He was no threat of the storyline of Michael Jordan and Bird and Magic and the rest of those guys. He wasn't a threat to that storyline. She is the storyline if she plays for Team USA. I wouldn't want her on the team either if I was on Team USA. And now, yesterday, we have more drama involving Caitlin Clark. Once again, nothing she did necessarily to stir this up, but we have the media involved, so now we're going to make something even bigger. Connor has the clip that I want to get into, because I really want to see what everybody, you know, thinks about this. But Gianna Carrington had a response to what she said here in this quote, and I'll tell you what she said. First, let's play Caitlin Clark question and answer in a media scrum.
No, know, you want to focus straight on basketball. You definitely respect that. But when, just ask you directly, when people use your name for racism, misogyny, whatever, what is your response to that specifically?
Yeah, I think it's disappointing. I think, you know, everybody in our world, you know, deserves the same amount of respect. The women in our league deserve the same amount of respect. So people should not be using my name to push those agendas. It's disappointing. You know, it's not acceptable. But yeah, I mean, this league is a league I grew up admiring and wanting to be a part of. Like, some of the women in this league were my biggest idols and role models growing up and helped me want to achieve this moment right here that I get to play in every single night. So just treating every single woman in this league with the same amount of respect, I think, is just a basic human thing that everybody should do. Like, you know, just be a kind person and treat them, you know, how you would want to be treated. And I think it's, you know, very simple.
So DeJounte Carrington says, dog, how one cannot be bothered by their name being used to justify racism, bigotry, misogyny, homophobia, and the intersectionalities of them all is nuts. We all have a platform. Silence is a luxury. She would have hated Michael Jordan. I would have hated Michael Jordan. Would have had no respect for Michael Jordan back in the day. Michael Jordan back in the day was criticized by Jim Brown, the great running back for the Cleveland Browns, because he didn't stand and say anything on anything. Had no interest. And there was a famous line that he said, hey man, Republicans, Democrats, both buy basketball shoes. Meaning, I'm not saying anything about anything concerning socially one way or the other. I'm trying to sell shoes. I'm not trying to get half the fan base to hate me so they don't buy my shoes, they don't buy my apparel and so forth. I'm going to play basketball, make my commercials, be like Mike and all that stuff, and do my thing. Tiger Woods. Earl Woods, his father, who of course passed away years ago. When Tiger was coming up, Earl Woods pretty much talked about how Tiger was going to help world peace. How he was going to travel around the world and be a much bigger figure than just a golfer. And he was going to have much more presence and say with world leaders and so forth. That's what his dream was for Tiger when he was done playing golf or while he was playing golf. Obviously, Tiger has not done any of that. Tiger plays golf, does his thing with the women, whatever. Tiger hasn't had some type of huge impact. He had an impact, yes, as far as, you know, being an African-American and doing what he did within the sport. He grew the sport from a popularity standpoint on TV. Cash, the purses are way bigger now when you win or place in tournaments than they were before Tiger Woods. He grew TV ratings, absolutely. He grew the participation amongst all different backgrounds in the game of golf over the course of time. People that weren't even thinking about going out on a golf course and playing golf picked up golf clubs, gave it a try, and maybe have golfed ever since. But that's not because he said something. That's not because he took a side on something. That's not because he took to a platform and did something. It's because he played. That was it. He isn't taking a controversial take or a take one way or the other. Listen, as I've said before, she's being put in a place where she's doomed to fail. There is just absolutely no chance of success here. Because now you've raised the standard that is ridiculous on the court. She's never going to reach it. You've raised the standard of kind of how she's going to save the WNBA and the heights to which you expect it to go. That's not going to happen. Now we've taken it to a whole nother level of saying off the court, she now has to jump up on a social platform and start having opinions on everything else and paying attention to everything. She herself said she's not even on social media. She's not. Now, can she say, yeah, you know, obviously I'm against racism, bigotry, and da-da-da-da-da? Absolutely. She went on another quote to talk about how she loves the WNBA. Her favorite player was who? Maya Moore, I think it was, growing up. And she's always wanted to be in that league and represent what that league represents. She is in a situation where guys like Stephen A. Smith went on TV today and started bringing up Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and going down the line of all these social activists. She's not that. And you can't expect her to be that. Everybody is built different. Everybody bleeds in different ways. Everybody has cares about certain things, maybe more than others. Some people may be really, you know, into, you know, defending dog rights and so forth and everything else. Other people be like, nah. Some people may be involved in really promoting their religion that they're in and going door to door and preaching about their religion. Other people may be like, nah. Everybody's got their own things that they're very passionate about. Should we all be passionate about racism? Yes. Sure. But does everybody want to get involved in that? On that level that Stephen A. is talking about, that these players in the WNBA are talking about? Does she want to get to that level? Because I'll tell you right now, if she gets to that level, they're going to be talking about that more than they're talking about what's going on in the basketball floor. So it's really up to her. If she chooses to step up and go be a social activist, God bless her. God bless her. We are acting like she is the first white American girl to play in the WNBA. She's not. Not even by a long shot. And we're acting like that all of her popularity is because, well, the white Americans, they're all excited because she's doing something. And they don't give that same type of love to the African Americans or whatever the case may be. Does race play into it to a degree? Probably. Yeah, it probably does play into it to a degree. Here, let me help you out. Tell me the last great white American basketball player in the NBA. Who is it? Larry Bird? I'm talking like a Hall of Famer. Not an international player. Not somebody from another country. Not Nash. Not Dirk Nowitzki. Great white American. Hall of Famer. Who is it?
Is it Kevin Love? Is that the most recent one?
Right. And you laugh and chuckle when you go, Kevin Love?
Right. It's not
I mean,
a bonus
there's just not. There's not. Right? There's not. So, from that perspective, and when you look at the sport and what we've watched and so forth, it's not like there's been a lot of great success. So now there's a white American woman who is apparently, and again, I'm not buying it, but apparently going to be some great basketball player. So yeah, she's going to draw some people because of that. I think that's natural that that's going to happen. So, again, I don't think it's necessarily, again, I don't want to get into this whole thing either necessarily, but I don't think it's, well, because she's white, that means all the racists are in now watching the WNBA or whatever the case may be. I don't, I'm not there because I don't think it's, first of all, I don't think the popularity is going to hold. I think it's going to fade she's going to end up being like every other player in that league. If you went around the country and asked people to name, you know, five WNBA players, how many people could do it? I would say less than 1%, less than 2% could probably name five WNBA players if you went to, I don't know, pick random states, Delaware, South Dakota, North Dakota, wherever, pick Arkansas, wherever. I don't care. Pick five states, any five states in the country. And you just walked out onto the street like they used to do on the Jay Leno show and these late night programs. And just wonder, can you name five WNBA players and put a microphone in any random person's face? How many people do you think can name five? One in 1,000? One in 10,000? How many? Just something that to me, I'm not going to sit here and say I feel bad for her necessarily because I don't. In any way, shape, or form, but there is a lot going on right now with her, and I'm sure she didn't see any of this necessarily playing out to this way. The stuff that happens on the court, her getting run over and pushed from behind, all that, that's her fault.
Don't run your mouth all the time and you wouldn't have people taking shots at you. But she got shoved behind from behind a couple weeks ago. She ran her mouth at that same player on the other side of the floor before that happened. How many people were talking about that on TV and on the radio? How many people talk about her shoving people when she was at Iowa that weren't paying attention? Nobody. She gets what she deserves when she's on the floor. Period. But when we start talking about the Olympics and her needing to be on a social platform and so forth, come on, man. Not every white American is on a platform doing that type of stuff. Not every African American is on a platform doing that type of stuff. I think everybody just needs to take a breath and let her play and see what happens. And if at some point she decides to be some type of social activist, fine. Then let her go be a social activist. That's cool. If she decides she wants to talk about, you know, dog rights, or she wants to talk about her religion or whatever, or if she's a staunch Republican or a staunch Democrat and she wants to go and speak on politics, fine. You know, LeBron James, he don't care. He talks on everything. But before LeBron, who was that guy? Who was that girl? Who was that player that talked on all these different issues prior to LeBron? Those people didn't exist. None of those athletes were talking on anything. None of them. LeBron was really the first one in quite some time. Probably got to go back to like the 60s and 70s to find athletes that were really speaking out. Because it really wasn't happening in the 80s and the 90s at all. And now we turn to Caitlin Clark and go, we want you to be like LeBron. She doesn't have to be like LeBron. She can be herself. It's like nobody goes to you and says, you need to be like this person. No. You have to be like your mother. No, you don't. You're your own person. You have to be like your father. No, you're your own person. You don't have to have the same beliefs as them. You don't have to have any of that. You're your own individual. That's the great thing about this country. Everybody needs to chill out. How did that sound, Connor? How do we do with that? Are you agreeing with me, disagreeing with me? Where are you at? We got to get to a break here.
Gabe and I mostly agree with what you're saying. I think that she's going to eventually have success in the WNBA, but I tend to agree with you. I don't think that she's going to be the greatest player of all time. I think that it's okay if she's just an all-star level type player. I also agree with you on the Olympic stuff. Gabe and I had a long discussion about it. And yes, you can make an argument that it's a quote-unquote missed opportunity to bring eyeballs and grow the game, but to your point, there's nobody that you can remove from that team. And if you're going off of merit and actual game, like skill, she shouldn't be on that team. The players on that team earn the right to be there. They should have a chance to go win another gold medal. And in 4 years, she'll be on that team most likely. And that's when we can have the Caitlin Clark Olympic stuff. So I pretty much agree with everything that you said.
He is Connor Dunning, producer of this very, very fine show, the Gabe Kuhn Show, here on 92.9 ESPN Memphis. Coming up next, Jason Munns will join us from the Commercial Appeal. Talk about all the fun stuff going over with the college basketball team. I want to get into really Mike Davis and the reported hire of Mike Davis heading to Memphis to help out Penny Hardaway. We'll do that next here on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 ESPN Memphis. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer filling in. Thanks for joining us today. Time to switch gears here. Talk some college basketball with Jason Munns of the Commercial Appeal. Check out all of his fine work at commercialappeal.com. Follow him on Twitter at Munzly, M-U-N-Z-L-Y. I'm sure most of you do already. The man's got 17,000 followers. I'm sure he's doing fine on followers. Jason, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you for having me.
All right. I wanted to get into a couple of different things. The Father's Day story, we definitely have to get into with Father's Day coming up this weekend. But before that, I am very interested in your opinion of Memphis deciding to bring in Mike Davis, the former Hoosiers coach, to kind of come in and help out Penny Hardaway. I guess, what are your thoughts when you heard that this was going to happen? I don't think it's officially reported. It's still in the, I don't know, rumor mill, whatever you want to say it is. What are your thoughts on it?
No, I do think it's done. I think really at this point, it's a matter of finalizing the contract, but I expect it to essentially be formalized pretty soon. It's inevitable. that's going to happen. I heard about this, I would say, about 2-3 weeks ago, that things were heading in this direction. And when I did hear about it, I thought, man, that's interesting. It's not what I would say. I didn't feel like it was out of left field. You know, Penny has sort of, you know, like he hired Larry Brown once upon a time. He had Sam Mitchell on his staff for one season. You know, he he had Frank Haith at one point. Obviously, Mike Miller was here for a couple of seasons. You know, guys with some name recognition and also people who have been in this business for a very long time. Obviously, Mike Davis is one of the, you know, he checks both of those boxes. He was the immediate successor to Bobby Knight at Indiana. Took him to the national championship game in 2002. I think that was his first year as the head coach at Indiana. Eventually went to UAB and Texas Southern and then Detroit Mercy most recently, where they went 1-31 last year. I'm not going to tell anybody how they should feel about that. It's not the greatest, but it's Detroit Mercy at the same time. Like, it's not an easy place to be. But I think as we sit here trying to forecast it and digest it, right now, it seems like it's got potential to be a very good thing. I mean, he's been in this game for a very, very long time and played it at a high level. He played at Alabama. He's been an assistant at, I think, both Alabama and Indiana, and then been the head coach at those four spots, and has had some success. He took Texas Southern to the NCAA tournament 4 or 5 times, if I remember right. So he had a lot of success in the SWAC there. I think it's certainly a good thing as we sit here today.
Jason, I think in every aspect of life, if you are a boss or whatever the case may be, you have strengths, you have weaknesses. The really good bosses understand what their weaknesses are and bring people in around them that is their strengths. So you kind of balance each other out and everybody thrives. What are Penny Hardaway's weaknesses that you've been able to tell? And would Mike Davis be a good fit to kind of help him through those issues?
Yeah, I mean, I would say obviously every coach needs people around him who have experience. Obviously, that was one of the things, that was one of the biggest knocks on Penny when he got the job, was that he had never been anything at the Division I level other than a player. The most coaching experience he had up until that point was AAU in high school, in middle school, I think, a little bit. And so, you know, anytime he can put people around him that have not only experience, but high level experience and a lot of it, you know, Mike Davis, again, he's been a head coach now for the last 20 years, been around the game for, you know, much longer than that. That feels like something that can only help Penny. And then, of course, just the knowledge that that goes along with being around the game for that long, the wisdom, you know, all those sorts of things. It feels like that can only be valuable as well. The more of that sort of stuff that you can put around yourself as a head coach, I think it's the more the better. So, as far as specifics, I don't, you know, it remains to be seen exactly how Mike Davis will help. I'm not sure, you know, don't know yet whether he's going to be an assistant coach or a more of a support staff member. So don't know how much he's going to be able, you know, exactly what his role is going to be. We'll figure that out eventually. I think certainly from an experience standpoint, he helps out tremendously.
Talking with Jason Munns of the Commercial Appeal here on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis. I thought I saw, and correct me if I'm wrong, That Penny Hardaway made some comments the other day about how this program is still building. Did he say that?
Oh, he said that was the question was asked of him that about his coaching staff. Interestingly enough, he had or last month I reported that he was not retaining one of his assistant coaches, Andy Borman.
Right.
And so, you know, every year there seems to be some turnover, some level of turnover with Penny. And so the question was asked, you know, what's going on with your staff? And he said he was still building his staff. That was what he was referring to.
Because my thing is this. So what are, I guess, expectations, or where what is the window for him to determine success or failure, or whether or not this is going to kind of work long term? Obviously, he flipped that roster last year using the transfer portal. It didn't work. Chemistry was a mess. And now he's flipped it again using the same type of deal. And they're still active in it. I see Young now has reopened his recruiting and checking out of Vermont. So maybe he comes back to Memphis. But from that perspective, if you're doing this consistently on a year-to-year basis, you could ask John Calipari. This is a very, very hard thing to do if that's how you're going to build a program.
Yeah, but at the same time, it feels like this is the direction all of college basketball is heading. You know, I mean, and I will say it seems like Memphis is sort of like it's happening more, like on a more larger scale than most places. Most places are doing like what, 5-6 portal editions,
right,
where Memphis is doing like, you know, 10-ish. and most schools are not doing it quite to that extent. But to answer your question, as far as like, you know, what determines success and how long does somebody get, or does Penny get to determine whether or not that's going to bear fruit or not. I think because of who he is, because of what he means to this city, because of what he means to the university, he has a bit more of the benefit of the doubt, you know. And I know that things have kind of gotten louder based on the way last season transpired, you know, 15 going number 10 in the country, 15-2. And this has been kind of like later January to completely missing the NCAA tournament after a start like that. You know, the criticism and the pressure has gotten a little bit, ramped up a little bit. And we are going, you know, Penny is going into season number 7. And so I do think that just naturally, having missed the NCAA tournament most recently, going 1-and-done the year before that, and go and winning just one other NCAA tournament game previously, you know, I do think that we are getting to a point where the pressure is increasing around this program to kind of get things back on track, and not only that, but also take a step forward in the progression. So, you know, I do not know how far the benefit of the doubt takes Penny Hardaway with the Memphis men's basketball program, but I don't think that we're quite there yet. Although I will say it does seem like there is more pressure today than there was this time last year or 2 years ago.
Well, there's also a possible elephant in the room. You don't have an AD. I mean, you've got an interim AD, obviously, in Jeff Crane. But as far as Penny's job security goes, does it even matter who the AD is? Are the boosters going to be the reason he stays more so than whoever the new athletic director is?
Possibly. I mean, I do think that, you know, I mean, this is different. Penny Hardaway is not, you know, he's not like every other coach at every other university in the country. You know, there are former players who are coaching and have coached in the past at their alma maters, but this is a little bit, it just is a little bit different. He's from here. He played here. And it isn't like he hasn't been successful. Like, if you
right.
look at where the program was before he took over, it was, I don't want to say in shambles, but maybe it was. Like, it was bad before he took over. You know, and then he comes in and he not only is it reigniting a fan base, but he's also recruiting at the highest, at an elite level. And while that hasn't necessarily translated to success in March, you do have to take all that other stuff into consideration. Like, you still are doing reasonably well with attendance, probably not where you'd like it to be, but there are other extenuating circumstances around that. But so, yeah, like, you got to take a lot of things into consideration when you're talking about Penny Hardaway and his job security. But you're right. It is, you know, the fact that there is a decision to be made around the athletic director, that is certainly something to bear in mind.
That's the other thing. So if we take, and I'm not going to use players necessarily, but if we take assistant coaches that were under Gray coaches, right? Let's say assistant coaches that were under Coach K at Duke, and now they get their own job, and they were the lead recruiter for Coach K at Duke, and they did all of this. And now they get their own position, and they still recruit fairly well, but for whatever the reason, it doesn't work out at the end of the day, and those big recruiting classes don't work. What's that? Well, maybe they're just not a great X's and O's coach, and that's why that talent never panned out into the wins that maybe it should have. Has that been discussed with Penny? Maybe it's X's and O's, and maybe that's where the struggle is?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, clearly, we're sitting here, and we're going into season seven, and Penny is, he just got it. I forget when he got the contract extension, but it was within the last couple of years. So I have a feeling that maybe not. And even if it has, even if that conversation has been had or brought up, you feel like the most recent athletic director, permanent athletic director, Laird Veach, left in April. If that conversation was had, it was probably had with him, and he's no longer here. So, you know, does that sort of reset the parameter? You know, does that reset the conversation? I don't know. I'm not quite sure whether that conversation has been had or not, but I lean toward no.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you've got guys that are great X's and O's guys and can't recruit, and they got to bring in assistants that can help to kind of get over the top because they don't have the personality or whatever the case may be. And then in other situations, you have guys that are great recruiters and simply just can't do the X's and O's part and have to rely on other assistants to kind of help them along that way. And rarely do you have guys that can actually do both at a high level. Talking with Jason Munns of Commercial Appeal, covers Tiger basketball for them. I want to make sure to highlight your story that people can still go back and read. Like a gift from God, why Father's Day has new meaning for Memphis basketball's Darby Rich, without giving away the entire article so people go read it. Give us some of the highlights of that piece.
Yeah, it really is kind of this is the way I put it out on Twitter. It's like sometimes stories just write themselves. Yep. Because they're so good, and it has nothing to do with me. It's just the story is that good, and I think that's what this is. You know, Darby Rich is the strength and conditioning coach at Memphis, and his wife got him a 23andMe ancestry DNA kit for really no other reason than to kind of he was adopted at birth, never knew either of his biological parents, and he was basically like, I don't know where I come from. Like, what's my heritage? What's my lineage? And so really that was all they were doing, is to try and figure out where he comes from. And lo and behold, about 6 months, maybe, I think it was, after he, got the results back and took the test and got the results back, he gets this message out of the blue from somebody who says, hey, I'm pretty sure I'm your half brother. And that would mean that I'm pretty sure I'm your paternal half brother, and that would mean that you have two other half brothers because he had a brother, and then those two guys had a half brother who was older than them, and you know they met up to kind of get to know each other, and they did that before one of the games last season, the East Carolina trip. And yeah, it's just been kind of neat for Darby to learn more about not only his, like, where his roots are, but, you know, he's learned a lot about his biological father, who unfortunately passed away in 2021. So that's kind of the sadness to this. Like, you know, he never got a chance to know his biological father, and his biological father never, as the story goes, his biological father didn't even know that he had a son.
What?
So this part of the story, his biological father was a lifeguard in Myrtle Beach back in the 60s. And there was a summer romance, a very whirlwind, brief summer romance that he had with a young lady. And once the romance was over, they went their separate ways and never spoke to one another again. And so he never knew that the girl he had been with got pregnant. Wow. It's been this really, really sort of heartwarming thing for Darby to be able to connect with some people that are, you know, part of his bloodline and get to know them and bring them into his family and for them to bring him into their families. And I thought it was a good time to do it. This being Father's Day coming up here on Sunday.
It's a great story. Go read it right now. Commercialappeal.com. Jason Munz. Follow him on Twitter at Munzly, M-U-N-Z-L-Y. Covers Tigers basketball over there. Jason, thanks so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you. Thanks.
You betcha. Take care. There he is, Jason Munz. It is the Gabe Kuhn Show. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer filling in. I wanted to get to it yesterday about the NFL making a gigantic mistake when it comes to discipline. I'll tell you what that's all about. Coming up next, Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN Memphis. Yesterday, this NFL contract, Trevor Lawrence agreed on a 5-year deal, contract extension, with the Jaguars for $275 million. $200 million guaranteed. $142 million at signing, according to Adam Schefter. Lawrence received a $37.5 million signing bonus, a source tells ESPN. The deal starts in 2026, meaning Lawrence will be under contract through 2030. The $55 million average salary in Lawrence's deal ties him with the Cincinnati Bengals' Joe Burrow for top mark in the NFL. Lawrence becomes the sixth quarterback to have an annual salary above $50 million, joining Burrow, Goff at 53. That was way too much money. Justin Herbert at 52.5, Lamar Jackson at 52, and Jalen Hurts at 51. Then it's Patrick Mahomes at $46.3 million. Guys, there are three quarterbacks that still need deals. Tua in Miami, Jordan Love in Green Bay, who's going last year of his deal, and Dak. All three of those guys need extensions. All three of them are expected to sign extensions this summer. If you're any one of those three teams, Green Bay, Miami, or Dallas, aren't you trying to get a deal done now? Because you don't want to wait to see what the next one is. No, I don't know if the GMs and owners of those three teams, well, Green Bay doesn't have an owner, but the GM, I don't know if they thought that was going to be the number on Trevor Lawrence. I can't imagine they did. Because if Trevor Lawrence, who's had one really good year, if he gets $55 million, what in the world is Dak Prescott going to get, Connor? 65?
Yeah, I have no idea. It makes no sense to me why the Cowboys haven't already done that deal with Dak. They're costing themselves money.
Oh, I don't think it's the Cowboys. I think it's Dak's agent waiting, wanting to see what everybody else gets. Why would Dak and his agent want to sign before Jordan Love or Tua? Now, I don't think he saw the Jared Goff number coming, but when he did, I'm sure he smiled. And when he saw the Trevor Lawrence number come out yesterday, if I'm Dak Prescott, I'm popping some champagne and really enjoying life, because that means your price just went up again. When we got into this offseason, people thought Dak was going to be around $60 million. People thought that Jordan Love and Tua were going to be around, you know, somewhere in the area of $50 million probably. Nobody talked about Jared Goff at $53 million, and nobody brought up Trevor Lawrence at $55 million. That is crazy. Now, think about it from the team's aspect. If you're the Jaguars and you don't pay Trevor Lawrence, that means you're going to have to start over at quarterback at some point, which means you're going to have to probably go quarterback shopping next year to try and hopefully find that guy, because you don't have that guy on your roster right now that you have an idea of whether or not he's ready. If you're Detroit, yeah, you have Hendon Hooker. He was out hurt still last year. You still haven't seen him really play in any type of game at this point. So we'll see what that looks like going forward. But obviously they weren't sold enough, so they give Jared Goff big money.
Deal with Dak. They're costing themselves money.
Oh, I don't think it's the Cowboys. I think it's Dak's agent waiting, wanting to see what everybody else gets. Why would Dak and his agent want to sign before Jordan Love or Tua? Now, I don't think he saw the Jared Goff number coming, but when he did, I'm sure he smiled. And when he saw the Trevor Lawrence number come out yesterday, if I'm Dak Prescott, I'm popping some champagne and really enjoying life, because that means your price just went up again. When we got into this offseason, people thought Dak was going to be around $60 million. People thought that Jordan Love and Tua were going to be around, you know, somewhere in the area of $50 million probably. Nobody talked about Jared Goff at $53 million. And nobody brought up Trevor Lawrence at $55 million. That is crazy. Now, think about it from the team's aspect. If you're the Jaguars and you don't pay Trevor Lawrence, that means you're going to have to start over at quarterback at some point, which means you're going to have to probably go quarterback shopping next year to try and hopefully find that guy, because you don't have that guy on your roster right now that you have an idea of whether or not he's ready. If you're Detroit, yeah, you have Hendon Hooker. But he was out hurt still last year. You still haven't seen him really play in any type of game at this point. So we'll see what that looks like going forward. But obviously they weren't sold enough, so they give Jared Goff big money.